Basically going through a Plutonian or a Plutonic I'm not sure what you would call it exactly. Basically my Uranus and my ascendant is conjunct her Pluto, and then my Chiron is opposing her Pluto within 5 degrees. Two of them are like 0 degrees, and the third one is 5 degrees. And so what that does is it creates a very magnetic and obsessive compulsive interaction between two people. And that's basically what I'm going through. It's almost tormenting. But at the same time, she shares outer wheel aspect with my ex, who in 2012 ended up having a secret affair and basically devastated our existence, and I was traumatized. I had to go on multiple different pharmaceuticals and herbs, and just for my insanity, I was just going crazy. And so basically her outer aspects are within 2 degrees of my ex's outer aspects. And so I think that triggered some trauma in me. And I was just a mess. Not as bad as I was in 2012, but I was a mess. And I still am dealing with some issues. We're pretty astrologically compatible. We got moon issues, though. Our moons are off by 5 degrees. If she was 5 more degrees, she would be her moon in Aries, and therefore her moon in Aries would be compatible to my moon in Libra. But she's moon in Pisces at 25 degrees. And so, and then, according to Vedic astrology, for those who understand Vedic astrology, her moon is in the 10th house and mine's in the 12th house, and it should be the other way around. So, because my moon is in the 12th house, my moon has more places to travel, more houses to travel in order to be sensitive to her emotional and psychological needs. So, since I'm not all that sensitive to her emotional and psychological needs, it's going to cause her to put up a wall, which caused me to get more emotional and not be sensitive to her needs, being more sensitive to my own. So that's a challenge that we have to work on if we're going to work things out. At this point, it doesn't seem like it's going to work itself out. It looks like it's a disaster. But only time will tell. But since nobody's here but us, I'm going to do astrology. Here's a couple of deals on Pluto and conjunction and other aspects. And it'll also basically explain my Chiron opposing her Pluto, and it'll explain my Uranus conjunct and my ascendant conjunct her Pluto. So here goes.
Hey everybody, Jewel back again with another super cool astrology video. And today we are talking about Plutonic relationship and a little bit about what that is and what goes on.
Actually, first I'm going to play a different one, then I'll come back to that. Top five. That's not the one I want. Darn it. Biscuit. Alright, well, here it is right here. Oh, that was it. I'm retarded. Hang on. Oh, okay. That's the right one.
Hey, Nicole here. We are going to talk a little bit about the 5 aspects that you find the most often in exclusive romantic relationships. So these are my top 5. Now, I have to offer this disclaimer. I have a moon in the 8th house, which is the Pluto house. So I like these aspects. For some people, they're too intense and they're too much, and you know, the opposite of what, you know, hey, one man's trash is another man's treasure. So at any rate, now, Pluto energies cannot be denied. Pluto has it's an outer planet in astrology. So people of your same age, you're going to have your Plutos in the same, around the same zodiac sign, okay? If not just one sign before or after, okay? So typically people your same age, their Plutos will be near your Pluto in your chart. So Pluto to Pluto aspects don't really mean anything. Pluto is a generational aspect, okay? So what we want to look at instead is we want to see personal planets making aspect to a partner's Pluto. So my top five favorite, and the reason this is because if you consider that I got my Pluto in Libra, as do most other people my same age, born in 1977, and when your Pluto's in Libra, that means that everybody is going to hit my Pluto and your Pluto and their Pluto all kind of, you know, in the same sort of way. Now, if somebody comes in directly, their Sun or their Moon or their Venus or their Mars makes a conjunction to my Pluto, meaning it's right next to it in the 360 degrees of the birth chart, or it's opposite the Pluto. This is significant because, again, we have 360 degrees in a circle, and we have eliminated, we've gotten down to the point where just a 6-degree window, and your planet is within my 6-degree window, okay? In astrology, the closer an aspect is to zero, being an exact 180-degree opposition or a 0-degree conjunction, the better, the stronger, more powerful it is. Now, why this is Pluto is this planet of regeneration. It's considered a karmic planet. It's a fated planet. It's, again, it's a generational energy that we're all under. People of our same age all have the same kind of planetary energy. So when somebody comes and they make an aspect and they activate your Pluto, they're going to bring up issues for you that have to do with transformation, death and rebirth. With that comes fear. We don't necessarily like to die and be reborn. So this person will bring up these compulsive fears in us. Somebody who has Pluto to your, we'll get to the five aspects that I love, but Pluto to these personal planets of yours, you as the personal planet person, so let's say you have Pluto, and it's a Libra-Pluto, and it's conjunct my Libra sun, okay? That means I am the personal planet. I am the one experiencing these feelings of obsession, these feelings of compulsion, these feelings that, for me, so say I'm somebody who's not normally a jealous person, but with you, there's, with passion comes, many times, this fear of loss of control of one's own emotions, loss of control of the partners and their behavior, and there's also this intense bonding that happens when you have Pluto contact with somebody. When it is in a romantic relationship or a sexual relationship, there is such intensity during this type of relating that the thought of this person going and doing that with somebody else can be disturbing to this planet person. Now, it depends on which planet is being activated. So we'll start with my top five favorite. They're in no particular order. Number one is just simply Pluto Sun. So if somebody's Pluto or your Pluto is either exactly opposite somebody's, your partner's Sun or vice versa, or conjunct the partner's Sun, or even trine the Sun, but I prefer, we're talking more about, this is explosive, so not oppositions and conjunctions, then there is going to be for the Sun person a feeling of obsession. You feel a little bit obsessed about the Pluto person as an entity. They themselves, for you, it's a little fatal attraction-ish, but, you know, not that you would kill their bunny rabbit or whatever makes you out of it, but it's like this is a little bit of obsessive, compulsive, you can't help but think about this person, okay? This desire, there's a feeling, a magnetic feeling with Pluto, Sun, Pluto, Moon, Pluto, Venus. You want to be near this person, and it's an intense draw, okay? But it's more so the person, it's them as an entity. Now, number two would be Pluto to the Moon. Pluto to the Moon is emotionally, so if someone's Pluto is aspecting my Moon, conjuncted or opposite, my Moon, so I'm going to feel emotionally exposed. You feel exposed to this person, you feel, again, these elements of obsession, this magnetic feeling, this sated feeling, this sense that this person could completely change my life and the way that I even look at the world, okay? There is a desire with Pluto Moon to merge. You want to merge with this person. But it's also this kind of scary thing. You kind of want to get away from this person or run from this person too, but you can't help but like come back towards them. It's, again, it's this magnet thing. It's like tractor beam that sucks you in. And it's because there's this deep underlying understanding that through this intensity, through this having to face your fears with this other person. You could have the opportunity to possibly be hurt or possibly not be hurt. And that process teaches us about trust. It's about trusting ourselves, trusting life, that no matter what, things are going to be okay. Okay? I went to this place with this person. You know, I let myself be exposed. Maybe they hurt me, but I survived in the end, okay? And ultimately, I was transformed, and I am now stronger for the experience. So this is why there's this faded kind of karmic feeling to the Pluto relationships, because the work you can do in these relationships is pretty monumental. Now let's talk about Pluto-Mars. This is two sexual planets, okay? Pluto is this transformative energy, but Pluto also rules the sexual organs, the orgasm itself. The act of sex, the main event, okay? So you take that, you combine it with Mars, which is the planet of war, the planet of passion, singularity, going out and fighting for something that, you know, is your personal passion. It's masculine. It's the man. You know what I'm saying? Okay, you put these two things together, it's a very volatile, heated, passionate, sexy, hot energy. We don't want to see, I mean, Pluto-Mars squares, these are, as far as the actual sexual aspect between two people, this is very hot, intense sex, but it burns out quickly, so you need to have other sexual aspects to kind of carry the relationship over the long haul if you're wanting to be a long-term thing. Otherwise, you'll end up in just a pile of ashes. If this is Pluto-Mars opposition or conjunction, this is a very volatile energy. There is a sense that these two people are going to, there's almost like ripping each other apart. Like, you really can, like, you need to be careful. This is a very, very magnetic, powerful energy sexually pulling two people together, but it can be quite destructive, jealous, combative, can be a little hot and heavy. You just need to be careful it doesn't self-destruct, okay? Because it's really just taking pure masculine energy and pure transformative energy and channeling it through sort of sexual tension and act of sex. And so anyway, it can be nice if there are other supportive elements in this industry, but it's a very hot, magnetic, explosive, most explosive, I would say, the ones of all the combinations we're talking about. But when you explode something, many times you've destroyed it, so not always great. Then we talk about Pluto. Let's do this too. I'm changing this. This is the top six. Okay, so Pluto-Venus. Pluto-Venus aspects are lovely. You got Pluto, which is transformation. Venus is our love nature. It's us. It's about where Mars is about singularity. Venus is about, she's like Mars's partner. She's about unification, harmony, bringing two people together. Since we're talking about relationships, through romance, through beauty, through love, truth, idealism, all this stuff. So you mix that with Pluto, and you have a very, very magnetic draw. This is the relationship where you love to be together. You love to, you can spend time together doing anything, trimming your toenails. It's just this like love, a love of being with one another. And also, by the way, all of these aspects, I would also consider looking at them. We're talking about the longitudes. I would also look at the declinations, which is, of course, this is as the planets orbit, you know, they're at different, you know, if you take the solar system, we're always looking at the solar system, the longitudes, which is flipping the solar system on its side, right? But if you were to look at the solar system, you know, just straight on, like cross-section, the planets have different places in their orbits vertically to one another. So anyway, that's declination. So I look at both. And I look at the helio and the geochart. But that's why you have to have an astrologer do your reading, because you don't need to know all this. But anyway. Now, with Venus, Pluto, this is one of the other great thing about this aspect is this is a lifelong sexual linkage between two people. This is the kind of relationship where it gets better and better and deeper the longer you're together. So you get married, you continue to have this really great sex life that's very private, but it will just be better and better with time. Okay, now we're going to talk about two other important, they're not aspects, but this has to do with synastry. So if somebody's any of their personal planets. So we're talking Sun. Well, I'll tell you the ones I care about. Sun, Moon, Venus, Mars, Pluto. And Pluto is not really a personal planet. It's more of a generational one, but we're going to count it anyway. If any of these planets fall into your eighth house, that's the Pluto house. This person for you is going to light up eighth house issues, which are the same thing as Pluto. This is this desire to, you'll be magnetically attracted to this person, depending on which planet is making the aspect. If it's their sun, it'll be a little different flavor than their moon or their Venus, but you are going to be very attracted sexually to this person. And if this is somebody who's not a possible sexual partner, this will be somebody that you either love or hate. It's this extreme kind of thing that it brings out in us, this eighth house Plutonian stuff. Now, also, if another aspect that I love for this magnetic thing is going to be if we take Pluto and, I'm just going to stick with, I said we're just going to do those five. I like those five that we gave. I'm not going to edit this, whatever, we just want to see our pants here. So, okay, if you have any of those, if you're wondering how to see if you have this with your partner, talk to me because this is what I do, and this is just one teeny tiny part of the whole symmetry and the synthesis of two people's charts when we overlay them and all the things that happen between two people. There are so many things to see there. It is absolutely mind-boggling and fascinating and very enlightening, especially if you're feeling stuck in a relationship or wondering if this is the right person for you. We can really see outlines kind of down the road how things will develop between the two of you. And initially, but ultimately, if what you need and what your partner needs, if you will be able to provide these things to one another, okay? These needs, whether they're security needs, communication needs, sexual needs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, okay? Intellectual, mental needs, all of this stuff, emotional. Okay, message me if you're interested in the reading, and we will get you read about this box next week. Left open still, so. Okay, have a good night. Bye.
All right. Well, she didn't exactly talk about the ones that I have in my situation, but I think the other lady does. I'm doing an edit here. Basically mine is, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's another aspect that I'm overlooking. Because I'm still new at the whole astrology thing. I've been doing this a couple years. Well, I started in 2010, but I didn't get hardcore into it until like 2012. And then the astrologer who was teaching me in 2012 was teaching me wrong and was doing it wrong. He was telling everybody he was doing Eastern astrology, which he wasn't. Then he was telling people that they were astrologically compatible with whoever, and they weren't. And I caught him doing this with two people specifically that I know. And I'm like, why would he tell people that they're astrologically compatible when they're not? And one of the persons, you know, he told them that many years ago before I came along. And then he told me, he said, well, I told them they weren't astrologically compatible, but they didn't listen to me. And, of course, they said that he told them that they were astrologically compatible. And so I'm like, okay. And then my last girlfriend, he was telling her that this one guy and she were so compatible, like, the best he's ever seen. You can't get more compatible than that. They're like so super compatible, blah, 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 blah. And she was tripping on that because this guy was married. He was not happy in his marriage, but he was married and they were having issues, but he was talking to her, my now ex-girlfriend, which is kind of a disturbing situation in the first place. But anyways, but yeah, he was telling us, he was telling my ex-girlfriend that this guy was just so super compatible, you can't get any more compatible than the two of them. And she was tripping on him because the dude was married, you know, and she was having a hard time dealing with it. And I was like, well, all right, I'll be honest with you. I'll tell you exactly, you know, let me look, you know, give me his information. And, you know, I already had her information. So I looked at it, and I'm like, I don't know why he's telling you you guys are compatible. You're not compatible at all. And, I mean, her and I weren't compatible either. We were more compatible than this dude. But, you know, her and I had Mercury and Venus issues. But we knew that going into our relationship. You know, we thought we could work through it, but we couldn't, due to whatever reasons. I'm not going to really go into that right now. But nonetheless, you know, I was honest with her about everything. I was honest with her about hers and my astrology. I was honest with her about hers and this other guy's astrology. But I don't even remember all of the aspects and all the whatevers, but this guy was so not compatible for her. And the astrologer that I was learning under was telling her that he was the best there ever was. And then I found out he was using astrology to use and manipulate people. So I pretty much quit him. But, you know, some of the things he taught me were inaccurate. And so I've been trying to relearn since then. And just kind of been trying to learn on my own, and it's a challenge. Because I don't have a lot of money to go to some astrological school. So I've just kind of been learning on my own from YouTube and books, mostly YouTube. And then I got where I can convert text to audio, and I convert text to audio. And I learn that way while I'm driving, because I'm a truck driver too. So I'm still learning all this stuff. I just recently found this woman who is astrologically compatible, with the exception of her moon, and Saturn. I should throw that in there. Saturn is square, but I'm not sure if that's good or bad or whatever. It doesn't appear to be bad. And her house placements are trine, so that's good. But the moons are off, our emotional and psychological needs. And then, I don't know, we got something going on. I mean, we got a magnetic pull between us, more on my side than her side, because I feel obsessed and possessed by her. And I don't know what's come over me. I'm not myself. It's crazy. It's insane, really. I haven't got, like, volatile or violent or anything weird like that, but, you know, I just lost my composure, if you will, and I'm not myself, and I don't like the way it makes me feel. I don't like being out of control, and so it bothers me. So I've been doing some homework, and I've been finding these plutonic situations, and so I got three more audios I'm going to play for you. Maybe there might be some answers in there. But this is how I feel. I don't know if this is how she feels, but this is how I feel. You know, because she's got the same thing going on with my planets, just in the reverse. So, but it doesn't appear that she's got it going on as intense as I do. So it appears like I'm the one who's going nuts and I'm scaring her off. But she's not scared off. She's just backed off. She still contacts me. I ended up having to delete her from my phone. I mean, I had to delete everything so I didn't blow up her phone. So now it's like I can't contact her unless she contacts me first. I mean, I practically got her phone number memorized, and I did back up her information in my email. But I don't go there because, you know, like I said, I'm trying to control myself. So now I only reply to her when she contacts me. And then I delete everything so that I'm not blowing up her phone. Because I will. I know myself. I'm not in control right now. And so that's how I feel with this whole plutonic aspect situation. And so that's why I'm going to play these for you until somebody calls in. And then we'll go on to the next subject. But here we go.
Hey,
Hey everybody, Jewel back again with another super cool astrology video. And today we are talking about Plutonic relationships and a little bit about what that is and what goes on in these types of relationships and why they exist in the first place. Why they are so attractive and so destructive. So Pluto and anybody's birth chart is really, where we experience our big transformations in life. Where we do our real melting down and then rebuilding. Where our deeper psychological issues are, our power issues, our power source. It's like, the battery in our birth chart. And very much, about issues of Scorpio in the eighth house. So if you want to, really get a view of Pluto, think of, what are the things of Scorpio? What is the personality of Scorpio? What is the personality and the things of the eighth house? And the eighth house is death, sex, transformation, deep change, other people's money, taxes, things that we bury, not things that are hidden from us, like things in the 12th house, things that we bury ourselves, things that we want to hide are very much.
That brings up another point, too. She has a lot of Leo and Scorpio in her chart, and that gives her a lot of power in her astrology, a lot of magnetic power. She's going to be able to have control and power over people just because of that power that's in her chart. People will bow down to her. And if she knows how to use that power constructively, she can use it in a positive way. But if she doesn't know how to use it constructively, then who knows what it could do. I mean, it appears that she might be a little traumatized by this power that she has. And she's afraid of it because my magnetism to her has caused her to get kind of fearful, and she's like standoffish. And so it may just be even that. She's got Scorpio in her chart, she's got the Leos in her chart, and it gives her a lot of power in her astrology. It gives her a lot of, I forget the words. But anyways, I have similar in mine. I have Leo and I have some Aquarius in my chart, which those are also fixed signs, and they're very dominant and very powerful as well, but not as much as hers. Hers is a lot more powerful than mine even. So, and then being a woman, an attractive woman on top of that, gives her even that much more dynamic, that much more power in her whole aspects. And maybe she doesn't like that. Maybe she wants to be more, she does have Pisces in her chart too, so she wants to be kind of more private and more just more reserved. So maybe that is a challenge for her. She doesn't like that magnetic power that she has. And so it may scare her, I don't know. I'm still working on the psychology of the whole situation. Me, I'm different. I do have some Pisces in my chart too, but not as much as she does. And so I like that attention. I like that magnetic draw. And so when women are attracted to me and that magnetism, it's excites me, and so it gets my attention. As long as they're doing it in a constructive way. Of course, I may not have been constructive myself lately, but and then again, she's got some issues that she's dealing with, family issues that I can't really go into either, but so she's got that going on as well. Maybe it's just not the right time for all this power to be going on, all this magnetism and all this crazy crap that's going on. But nonetheless, she's got a lot of power in her chart. So And between us, there's a lot of power, a lot of astrological compatibility, a lot of power between us, a lot of magnetism there, because, like I said, she's still interested in me. She hasn't run. You know, I tend to scare women off because I come on too strong, or I just have this aggressive personality because of all my Leos and other aspects that I have. I mean, I talk too much. I'm a very loving and affectionate person, and I pour my heart out too much. I'm too honest. I'm too transparent. And I tend to be kind of scary to people. And they just don't know how to take me, pretty much. You know, I come off, I guess, abrasive to them. And they can't handle it. They don't know what to do with it. You know, so they just run. They're like, ah! You know. But she hasn't ran. She just backed off. You know, she still sends me messages. Well, not messages, mostly pictures. She'll send me a picture, you know, every other day or every day to, or something. She'll send me something to let me know she's still interested, you know, to keep me attached, to keep me involved, you know, to keep me, to let me know that she's still here. She's not going anywhere. But she won't communicate with me. I need communication. I'm a talker. I want to have communication. I need communication, and she's not communicating with me. It's driving me crazy. And you know, astrologically, we should not have communication issues, but for whatever reason, we're having communication issues. So, that's driving me crazy, too. But anyway, power. We got power in our astrology. And so with that, I'm going to finish this audio.
About the things in Pluto. So when we look in the birth chart to where Pluto is, you know, aspects that Pluto is making to other planets, that's really, you know, showing where the transformation is going to come through. You know, the house and aspects that, you know, Pluto is making, you know, that is, you know, the vehicle for Pluto to actually, you know, show up in the light. And those are the planets, you know, that are in aspect, you know, show, you know, where we're born and where we're going to change, where we can become softened and where our suffering comes through. Pluto is a lot about self-recrimination, self-suffering, you know, the elements that we hide because we think that they are not acceptable, where we dominate and control, where we're our own worst enemy is a lot of about Pluto. So when we have heavy Pluto contacts between two people in a relationship, you know, we can see this in the synastry. And if it is also showing up at the composite chart, this can be called a plutonic relationship. So, you know, contact between, you know, one person's Pluto and the other's Sun, Moon, Venus, sometimes Mars, are very potent and very attractive. You know, there's inner planets when someone else's, and the ascendant as well. The
That's the one I got.
When, you know, these planets or points are contacted by somebody else's Pluto.
Okay, she talks about the ascendant. The ascendant is the one, maybe that's the one that's triggering my emotions and everything else. I don't know. But anyway.
It's a very intense pull. It can be very binding and very attractive. So Pluto is a lot about where we have sex and where we find our obsessions. So, you know, if we have a lot of conjunctions or oppositions in synastry, and then we also see that showing up on the composite chart, we know that there is going to be a heavily plutonic force between these two people. So there are several, you know, asteroids and planets that we look to and the birth chart to show us, you know, contact, you know, in synastry. And in the composite chart, you know, you can see how heavily plutonic a relationship is by how many and how forceful and how big the contacts are between the two people and how close, you know, in orb the contacts are as well. So, you know, asteroid Hades, of course, the planet, I consider it a planet, Pluto, Proserpina or Proserpine. These are asteroids that you can put in, and Persephone. Persephone and Pluto are going to be the two main ones that we look. Now, one is Greek and one is the Roman. As I go through this video, those are the two that I'll be using the name of. But you can look up any of these, you know, Hades or Proserpine, and pull those up and see, you know, contacts with those as well. But I don't want to hear it in your comments about, hey, you're mixing two mythologies. You know what I'm talking about, so shut up. So, when we're talking about Pluto in contact with another person's planet, the Pluto person is going to be the one that dominates. The Pluto person is going to be the one that holds the power. So you want to look at, you know, what the...
Okay, going back, she was talking about composite charts. We do have we have Mars and Venus conjunct our Pluto in our composite chart. It's not in 5 degrees, but it is still conjunct. Now, I'm not sure how strong that means, what, not, whatever, but we'll continue.
The Pluto person is contacting in the other person's chart. Is it the Sun? Is it the Moon? Is it Venus? Is it Mars? Is it the North Node? What is going on there? Is it the ascendant? That's really potent too, because that is the parts of the partner that the Pluto is going to control. That's the parts of the partner that Pluto is going to have power over. So typically, you know, in a Plutonic relationship, one person shows up as the Pluto person. So this is the person that has the heavier Pluto contacts. Now, you can have both people who are heavily plutonic themselves and then draw an equally plutonic relationship to them. So they're both playing out the Pluto role. So you'll want to look at the composite chart always to see the details, the bigger picture. So, you know, in a composite chart, when we have Venus square to Pluto or Venus opposite to Pluto, this can be as many as 10 degrees in this orb, in the composite chart. We actually have wider orbs in composite charts than we do in synastry charts, orb allowance. This is one of the contacts that is the most potent and the most difficult to deal with and the most painful and more transformative in the long run. So in synastry, same thing, you know, it's very attractive and very potent, but in the synastry between two people, also, you know, Pluto contacts to the Sun, the Moon, Mars, the Ascendant, those, you know, are going to, you know, show those intense ties as well. So when we have a heavily Plutonic relationship, there is a theme of control and fear of abandonment. And these are the two big elements that we see going on here between two people. So, you know, Pluto abducted Persephone. He came up out of the ground. He saw her out picking flowers, doing her own thing. He thought she was young and beautiful and fresh, and he was infatuated with that and wanted to own that. He wanted that for himself. So he rose up out of the ground and took her. Took her down to the underworld. And forcibly raped her and made her his bride. He married her. She didn't want anything to do with this. This was his idea. So this is very much like, you know, the first part of the story. This is very much akin to finding oneself in a platonic relationship. And typically we wake up all of a sudden and realize, oh my gosh, look what I am in. Because platonic relationships are very much like the moth to the flame. Now, the moth doesn't know it's going to get burned, right? It thinks that that flame is the most beautiful thing it's ever seen, so mesmerized by its perfection and glowing loveliness. It thinks that flame has everything it's looking for. It's not thinking it's going to get burned. It's not thinking it's going to fry itself on the flame, right? So this is very much how platonic relationships present themselves in the beginning. They are very attractive. They are something that we want to pursue more than anything else that we've got going on. And Pluto grabs us. You know, the Pluto person in the relationship, or if it's both people, then, you know, we can kind of see the role switch. The Pluto person really grabs the Persephone person and drags them into a relationship very much based on unconscious insecurities and fears. That is very much how we are dragged down to hell, as Pluto did with Persephone. That is, you know, that moment when we are dragged into a relationship that is going to dredge up all kinds of issues that both people in the relationship need to deal with, their platonic issues. So the things that we bury and need to confront are brought to the surface as outward power struggles in the relationship. And we see the beginnings of that when Pluto, you know, the Pluto person in the relationship really decides that the Persephone person is worth investing in. So then, you know, Persephone gave up her real selfish desires and became very much restricted by Pluto when she was trapped in the underworld. And she had no voice of her own. You know, her expression was cut off, and what she was became very much determined by Pluto. So this is very much when, you know, very much like that stage in the relationship where after we realize that we are in an intense relationship that is not what we bargained for, not what we thought we were getting into. This is when we start to walk on eggshells, the Persephone person. This is when they start to sell out and conform to keep the peace with the Pluto person. Because the Pluto person is very afraid of the Persephone person in the sense that they are afraid that if the Persephone person realizes their power and who they are, that they will leave them. Because the Pluto person doesn't feel like they deserve the Persephone person. That's why Pluto abducted her in the first place. He didn't think that he could talk her into living in
hell. Okay, now that I listen to it even more, it's like it's the reverse. She's the Pluto person, and I'm the I'm the other person. So, I don't know. It's weird. Anyways, okay.
He knew he had to take her. So, you know, changing one's behavior in the presence of the Pluto person to maintain the Pluto person's sense of security, this is when you really know that you are embroiled in a platonic relationship. When your expression is restricted and you start giving up whole parts of yourself so you can become or keep the Pluto person happy, this is when we are deeply, deeply involved in our trip down to Hades at this point, because both people are very invested in the relationship. relationships, they do not want to let go. This is not like Uranian relationships, like, oh, hey, how you doing? Bye. No, this is, hi, how you doing? I am going to be with you till the day I die. I mean, they are very, very intense in their need to keep each other in their lives. So the Pluto person becomes very jealous and insecure easily in a plutonic relationship. And Persephone knows this. She starts to feel this. She sees this. She starts to be blamed for this. And, starts to cut out, whole elements of conversation because she knows that that could upset Pluto. Doesn't bring up things from the past that she knows could upset Pluto. You never talk about old boyfriends or old girlfriends in platonic relationships. That's not allowed. The Pluto person starts to ingratiate the Persephone person. And they do this by doing too much. It is a selfish form of making the Persephone person dependent upon them. Because the Pluto person wants to control the Persephone person completely. And they want the Persephone person to depend on them for everything. So they put it to the Persephone person like, look how good I am to you. Look what I do for you. I slave away for you. I've worked my whole life for you. It's all for you. But it's all about creating an atmosphere of guilt so that the Persephone person must comply with what Pluto is looking for and what Pluto wants and Pluto's plans. Pluto's plans are very, very big for Persephone, and they have very much to do with keeping Persephone with the Pluto person. So, Pluto doesn't like change. And in platonic relationships, the Pluto person tries to prevent change. They want the Persephone person to stay the same because growth is very much not allowed in Plutonic relationships. That's seen as very scary. Staying the way we've been is more predictable. And so the Pluto person wishes the Persephone person to stay emotionally stunted. So they know that they have them right where they want them. They know what they're dealing with. They want to know the Persephone person is always going to be the Persephone person. So growth is very much restricted. Expression is very much restricted. Movement can be very much restricted. Where someone can go, what friends they can have, their social circle. These things are very threatening to the Pluto person in a heavily plutonic relationship, and they're going to try to restrict that and control that so that becomes more predictable to them, controllable. So the Pluto person always thinks they're doing the right thing. They always are under the impression that they are doing this for the good of the Persephone person. Because they're keeping the Persephone person safe. They are guiding the Persephone person. They are making sure that the Persephone person, remains in a state where nothing can get to them. Well, this is where the Pluto person really lies to themselves. Because it is not kind or loving to restrict somebody's growth because it is easiest for you. The Pluto person, tells themselves it's very much about love, where it's very much actually about fear. And so, love and fear become very much mixed in heavily plutonic relationships, especially when we have heavy Venus and Pluto contacts. The love and the fear very much are you know, kind of the same animal. So, you know, this unhealthy dependence creates an environment eventually where the Persephone person becomes weakened and they start to doubt themselves. They start to feel like they can't leave. They start to feel, they get used to a feeling of powerlessness, and this becomes the norm for them. And this is really when we see, you know, elements of Stockholm Syndrome start to set in with the Persephone person. They start to really identify with the feelings of the Pluto person. And they learn to live, the Persephone person, the life that Pluto needs to feel secure. So, you know, they must accept the role that Pluto gives them and be happy with what Pluto provides for them. And the relationship starts to deteriorate from deep desire into need and obsession. And when what we try to control, you know, really becomes our master. What we seek to control really ends up controlling us. And the Pluto person, you know, doesn't want to be abandoned, so they try to control the world around them, try to control the Persephone person to prevent that. But this is where we see the cause. It is a self-fulfilling prophecy, the Pluto person's fears and insecurities regarding the Persephone person. So, you know, the ends really justify the means to Pluto. And, you know, because the end, you know, the means is, you know, keeping Persephone safe, and then, you know, the end, the means is, you know, control, but the end is, you know, in their mind, keeping Persephone safe, but really, it's about them not being alone. It's a selfish motivation. So, they really see the Persephone person as their possession. The Persephone person starts to realize this, and it's typically after they have given up whole parts of themselves and invested a lot in the Pluto person's feelings, and they start to identify the Pluto person's feelings. They start to lose who they are. They start to forget who they are. They become empty inside, and they become very much emotionally bankrupt. Because when you give, and you give, and you give, and you have to constantly give in Plutonic relationships, when you give, and you give, and you give, you eventually, there's nothing left. You know, we all have a love bank, and when nobody is making any deposits in your love bank, and typically in a good relationship, you're getting more deposits than you are withdrawals. But in a Plutonic relationship, it's always withdrawals, and you feel guilty, so you take out money out of your own bank to give to them too, because not only are they taking, you'll take out love too, you'll give it to them too, because you want them to be satisfied, because you don't want to be guilty. You don't want to be guilty of not satisfying them. You don't want to be guilty of not meeting their needs. It's very exhausting to not give the Plutonic person what they want, because they are so relentless in their pursuit of taking from the Persephone person. The Persephone person not only allows the Pluto person to bleed them dry, they help them to do it. So then we are in a situation where, you know, Persephone has been the victim, Pluto's been the boss who knows best, and Persephone is brainwashed. So she starts to blame herself. And she becomes very guilty about everything, distrustful about everything. And guilt becomes her prime motivator in the relationship, not love. The avoidance of blame becomes a motivator in the relationship. It is not about love. It is about now self-protection at this point. And when we give our power away, we experience a sense of resentment, you know, towards ourselves. Guilt is really resentment turned inward, and unrecognized resentment. And guilt is what the Pluto person really uses most to control the Persephone person. You know, not just fear, and not just, threat, but guilt.
Yes, that's just weird, because I thought that, well, I don't know, the way it sounds here is it sounds like the Pluto person is the crazy person, but I'm not the Pluto person, and I'm the crazy person. So I don't know. Maybe it's a different aspect that I'm overlooking or that I don't know about. So I got to do some more homework on it. But since we're on the subject, I'm going to keep going with it. Maybe I'm just blowing this whole thing out of proportion. Maybe I'm just looking too much into it, because I can be obsessive compulsive. I am OCD. Of course, she is too, or she says she is. So, you know, we talked about that on our first date. You know, we're both obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. So, who knows? I don't know. But, like I said, this is the subject, so I guess we're just going to keep going with it.
Wherever Pluto is in the birth chart is where we find our guilt and where we find our resentment. And when we have this become, you know, the prime motivator for what we're doing in a relationship, there is no room left for love, because now we're in survival mode. We're in avoidance mode, the Persephone person. So she feels guilty for her powerlessness. She feels guilty for her ineptitude to give Pluto all that he wants. And she begins to hide, because the confusion that Plutonic relationships introduce is very difficult to cut through. And that confusion comes as a result of the Persephone person, you know, starting out with one perception, one belief about the Pluto person. You know, this is going to be great. This is going to fulfill all my deepest emotional needs. And then not so much. They are introduced to a different person. And this creates a real kind of split. And they don't know what to think. They're still hopeful that the original person is going to return. Well, she starts to feel guilty, you know, for not appreciating all that Pluto does. Because Pluto, you know, the Pluto person in the relationship is going to be very, you know, adamant about, look what I have done for you, look what I have provided for you, look at the material things that I have given you. And when the Persephone person starts to ask, is there more? This is when things really start to fall apart. This is the first glimmer of her realizing that she is worth more than Pluto let on about. So she starts to do things that reintroduce her with her power, the Persephone person, when she starts to make these real realizations about the true nature of the relationship she's in. And she does things and begins to act in unconscious ways that are meant to ultimately lead to her freedom.
Now, I am going back and looking at my last girlfriend's chart and my chart, and we both were the Pluto people and a Persephone people. So I got my Pluto at 5 degrees, and her Sun was opposing to mine at 6 degrees, so it was within 1 degree of each other, and so that's one of the aspects that they're talking about. Then, her Pluto was in Virgo at 12 degrees, and my Mars is Virgo at 15 degrees, and so that's within 3 degrees of each other. So it's almost like we were both beating each other up, and I can see that a lot in our relationship. That's why we only lasted a year. I felt like she was beating me up more than I was beating her up. But it could have been, the both of us. I mean, of course, I don't know. She was kind of an abusive alcoholic, verbally and emotionally, not physically. But, and I felt like I was being forced into the codependent role. And I refused to be forced into the codependent role. So, yeah. Then, of course, I have my own moon conjunct with my own Pluto within 2 degrees. So I could probably beat myself up, which I do that a lot, too. But I worry too much, and I beat myself up. Kind of like Liar, Liar. I'm kicking my ass! Do you mind? But anyways... So, yeah, I just had to go back and look at that. We really had a lot of that going on, more than this new woman and myself do. So, I don't know. Like I said, maybe there's another aspect I don't know about. But, I don't know. It's just intense. I feel like I'm going insane. Maybe it's just because we're really astrologically compatible and then our moons are off, and so it's throwing us off. Who knows? I don't know. We'll figure it out. I guess time will tell, right?
So, she can, at this point, the Persephone person can become manipulative herself or himself, depending on, the power dynamic between the two people. Who is the Pluto and who is the Persephone? Or, is this both of us and we're just switching roles? Sometimes the Persephone person can start to lie. They can start to, because they're reacquainting themselves with who they really were, they're starting to take glimmers of what they used to be or what they could be. And the only way that they can really spend time with that is not in the sight of the Pluto person, because change is not allowed. So, this is a very unconscious eruption, generally, when the Persephone person has to leave the relationship. It very much, presents a crisis to the Persephone person, because, there's this crisis between, safety, which they think they have had. There's a sense of that with the Pluto person and the risk of the unknown. So, oftentimes we can create, especially in Plutonic relationships, we assist the Pluto person, the Persephone person will assist the Pluto person in creating these, artificial boundaries. And just by having those boundaries, we can feel a sense of safety, even if those boundaries are not correct, or way off. Just because they exist, we can feel like, that is the container that we can exist in. So the Persephone person, has to break out of that in order to, emerge from Hades and take, the incredible experience with her or him that they have, collected in this incredibly intense and psychologically revealing relationship. So Pluto really ends up, in the long run, creating a situation where he makes his own fears come true. He doesn't want to be abandoned, so he controls, so that doesn't happen. And he blames it on his love for the Persephone person, when really it's not love at all. It's selfishness based on need. The Persephone person, acts in ways that are reactionary to, what the Pluto person has set up, and thereby, in the long run, makes the Pluto person's worst fears come true, because the Persephone person is not going to put up with control and manipulation and guilt as the motivator for having this relationship forever. So the Pluto person, starts to, have a sense that they are losing control when they see that the Persephone person is regaining some of their strength and acting in ways that the Pluto person absolutely does not approve of. So Pluto really ends up manifesting his own fears and his worst fears to the Persephone person, because he ends up putting himself in a position where he is left. He is eventually abandoned by the Persephone person. And then it's a, aha, I knew it. I knew you were always going to abandon me. I knew you were only after my money. I knew you only wanted my property. I knew you were going to do this to me. I made you promise on our wedding day that you wouldn't do do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And now here you are doing it. That's what you get when you are the Persephone person in the end. You get blamed for everything. And it is really the Pluto person who set this up psychologically to deal with their own and be confronted with their own issues of abandonment. It comes, the confrontation with their own power and weakness comes through the Persephone person, and the Persephone person comes to know their own power, because they have to find it, they have to build it, they have to recreate it. Their own power goes through a transformation where it was squashed. And then in a situation of stress, they had to redefine what that was and find it again. And that creates a stronger person than the people around them. Because what we work on, what we have to practice, what we have to work hard for, that becomes our strong point. So, distrust and fear end up creating an atmosphere where Persephone, the Persephone person has to get out to survive in order to breathe again. And the Pluto person, then at that point, I knew it! I knew you were going to abandon me. When, what was the Persephone person supposed to do? Remain in this? So that the Pluto person could have what they needed forever and ever and be happy?
It almost sounds like she's got a personal investment in this aspect. She made 3 videos on it. She's very emotionally passionate about it. So She may be dealing with this aspect herself. And I can understand that because, like I said, I had that with my ex, and it was intense, and it was challenging. I don't know if I had that with my ex prior to the last one. I'll have to go back and look. But it doesn't appear that I'm having that issue with the current one. I got to look deeper and look at other aspects, so I have to do some more homework on that. But because something's making me lose control, and I don't normally do this. I don't normally lose control like I feel like I have no control right now. So I just don't know what it is. Normally I'm not like this. So I'm just trying to look at everything from an analytical point of view and figure out what my problem is so that I can move beyond it. So, who knows? All right, here we go.
Really? Is curbing somebody's growth so that you can have what you want, love? So the Persephone person has to get out to survive. And when she escapes, when the Persephone person leaves the platonic relationship, don't think Pluto's just going to let go. That doesn't happen. Pluto is not going to let go. Especially with contact to Pluto with the moon, or Pluto with the north node, or Pluto with the ascendant, or the sun. This is a really, or Venus.
Now, she's got Pluto to my ascendant. So maybe that's why she's not letting me go. Even though I've been irrational, according to my own opinion, even though I've been irrational, she's not letting me go. So she does have Pluto Pluto conjunct my ascendant within 5 degrees. And then we, in our composite chart, we both have Pluto conjunct Mars and Venus within 8 degrees. So that could be why neither one of us are, you know, letting go. It may or may not be a healthy relationship, but neither one of us want to let go. And I feel like I'm the one who's more obsessed than she is. But at the same time, she's still not letting go. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's going on.
These are potent contacts here. You know, Pluto, the Pluto person can, you know, be very manipulative. They can be stalkerish.
I wish she would stalk me, but she's not. I'm stalking her. Not really, but I am, you know what I mean? I'm not... But she can't really be stalked too easily by me because she doesn't really have a lot of stuff on the internet. And I'm a truck driver, so I can't, like, stalk her, but I probably would if I could, because I'm just, like, that far out of control, I feel. Maybe not that far out of control, but I feel like I am. I feel like I am. So, I think about her every day, all day long. It's like she consumes me. But she's the Pluto person, not me, so I don't know. Unless you're looking at our composite chart, then we're both the Pluto people, so I don't know.
You know, when all hell breaks loose, when they feel like they have or are losing control, and they can become, you know, make threats of suicide, make threats of, you know, financial, you know, destitution. And the Persephone person has to generally run.
Run! You know, and maybe this is something that I have to look forward to. I'm the Persephone person, and she's the Pluto person. You know, maybe this is what the future holds for me. Maybe she's going to become this person. I don't know, but... I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. You know, like it says, my last girlfriend, she was very possessive. I mean, I couldn't talk to anybody. I couldn't talk to dudes or chicks because she would accuse me to want to have sex with any of them. Like, you know, she's accusing me of being gay and whatever just to control me so I wouldn't go talk to nobody. And, I don't know, it was a very disturbing relationship. I still have love for her. I wish things would have worked out, but they didn't, and they can't, they won't, and I know that, but I still wish it could have, would have, should have, you know. Yeah, she was very domineering. I don't know if she was stalkish. Yeah, well, yeah, she's stalking me now to this day. We've been broke up for over a year, and she's still stalking me. So, yeah, she's definitely a Pluto person. And I still got the... Oh, no, I don't have that chart up anymore. But, oh, yeah, I do. It's over here. She had... Oh, okay, yeah. I was the Persephone person with my Mars. And... to her Pluto, and then she was the Persephone person with her Sun to my Pluto, but it just doesn't seem like my Pluto was as aggressive and dominant as her Pluto. She was very dominant, very aggressive. I mean, I'm dominant and aggressive too, but she kept accusing me of trying to dominate her. So that she could dominate me. It was just all screwed up. We just had a really screwed up relationship. But anyways, back to the audio.
To break the tie. It is not common in platonic relationships to have a easy or amicable breakup. Typically, you know, the Persephone person has to develop qualities within herself that are very, the Pluto person, you know, sees, you know, is very disapproving of in order to get out of the relationship. You know, the Persephone person has to find their own voice. They have to find their own power. They have to, you know, deny these conversations of guilt from the Pluto person, and the Pluto person begins to turn on the Persephone person because they see the Persephone person as the enemy because they are no longer able to control them. And what Pluto can't control, Pluto fears. And so, if he can't subdue the Persephone person, he will deny the Persephone person. So, it's really about, you know, in the end, about facing one's own demons, these intensely platonic relationships. It's about facing our fears of abandonment, so we can transform it into a of being able to rely on our own self to where we don't need that other person. Because really, Pluto in its heart of hearts was extremely insecure and wanted to own what Persephone had. She had free expression. Remember, on the surface, before she was drawn down to hell, she was freely herself. She was wild. She was her own person. She was young and fresh and free of any kind of a control. She was what he didn't think he could be. So he wanted to take those qualities for himself forcibly instead of working for it. Because the Pluto person has a very, very, very large sense of entitlement in the relationship with the Persephone person. They feel very much like they are the king of the underworld, and they deserve what they deserve, and the Persephone person is there to meet their needs. And it's when, you know, they realize the opposite, that they can decide that the relationship is actually not worth investing in, because it isn't about their needs anymore. And that is the reason they chose it to begin with. So the more the Persephone person can develop their own strength and their own character and really rediscover who they are and become independent and become strong and become not fearful of the world, this is when the Pluto person really backs off and decides that they really are not attracted to the Persephone person anymore, because that is not what they were attracted to in the first place. So when the Persephone person finds her voice, breaks out of that hell, becomes who she was meant to be, who she was before she got into this, when she transforms the control she had into her self-control, that is when she's free of this relationship. That is when the Pluto person gives up, because he sees her as something he can't conquer. And in his mind, she isn't worth his time. So, this is my explanation of Plutonic relationships and what they are and what they can cause. And please subscribe to my channel if you enjoyed this. I'll be back with more super cool videos. I do specialize in relationship and intimacy astrology. I do private consultation. Email for more information. And you can find me on the internet at truthandaspectastrology.com and on Facebook at Truth and Aspect Astrology. And make sure to check out my partner, Seth Roback, awesome astrologer, also here on YouTube. I'll be back soon. Bye-bye.
So yeah, I don't think she's controlling me. The only way she's showing any real power over me is not communicating with me. I mean, I only hear from her, like, if I'm lucky, once a day or a couple times a week. And that just drives me crazy. I really like her, but I just need more communication than a few times a week. And especially since I'm out here on the road, being a truck driver. So I don't know. Like I said, I was thinking maybe it was, you know, a Plutonian situation, but I don't think it's so much that anymore. I think it's got to be something else, and I got to look deeper into it, because, like I said, she doesn't fit the description of what this lady is talking about, how the Pluto person will treat, I forgot how to pronounce it, the other person. She's not treating me that way. The only problem is no communication. And we should have communication. She has a Gemini ascendant. I have a Libra ascendant. She has Mercury in Leo on a Virgo cusp in the house of Gemini. I have Mercury in Virgo on a Leo cusp in the house of Aquarius. Communication should not be an issue, but it is. So that's what's driving me crazy. Maybe that's all it is. Just for whatever reason, there's no communication and it's driving me crazy. So I don't know. Or I'm just crazy, period.
Hey everybody, Jewel back again with another astrology video. And I'm adding to my series about Plutonic relationships today, giving a little bit more detail about what that is, because I've gotten a lot of questions and a lot of comments on these videos. And a lot of the comments and the emails and the messages I'm getting are from men who think that I am being too hard on Plutonic relationships. The overwhelming opinion seems to be that I'm confusing passion with abuse. Well, I find it really interesting that I'm also receiving a lot of messages and emails and comments from women who have been really badly injured and hurt in these types of relationships. So it's really interesting to me that I haven't received any comments from women regarding me being wrong or difficult or feminist about this. So it's interesting to me that it's really striking a chord in people is what I'm seeing. And so I think I should clarify what constitutes a platonic relationship. And in my past videos, I am specifically talking about difficult or hard Pluto contacts that result in a oppressive or unsatisfying or scary relationship between two people. So I am not talking about, you know, sextiles or trines or quintiles. I'm mainly, you know, talking about oppositions or squares, sesquisquares, sesquiquadrates, conjunctions sometimes. When we're talking about difficult Pluto contacts, that's usually how they'll show up. But we can see, you know, two sextiles showing up as a conjunction in a composite chart. So, you know, depending on what the synastry is, depending on what the composite charts are, that will really show you what the contacts really are, or what the combining energies are in the composite chart. So, what can we do when we find ourselves in a platonic relationship? What are some of the skills that we can develop? Well, you have to really understand the nature of these relationships, the reason for it. And really, we're talking about two people that are experiencing a lot of unconscious uncovering of each other and of themselves. And in that process, we learn some very hard things about ourselves. And that is really the meaning, the reason behind these relationships is to uncover some very dark or hidden or buried or undealt with parts of ourselves so we can have a chance to do something about it. So we can have a chance to heal that. So we can have a chance to improve that. So in platonic relationships, we tend to see the worst of each other because that is the nature of it. That is the reason for it. We don't achieve a really good look at ourselves if we aren't pulling up and vomiting up the icky stuff from within. That is what Pluto really is asking for in these relationships. This is why we see, you know, the worst parts of each other when in a platonic relationship other people are, you know, not necessarily seeing what's going on. They're seeing the best parts of us or of our partner. So these relationships are really, you know, meant to strengthen the person that or the people that is playing the victim role. Because in these types of relationships, typically we see one person with the power and the other person playing the victim role, but we can see an even relating of the two. It really depends on the two personalities. We can see the two people evenly victimizing or manipulating or controlling each other. So, yes, it is a deep passion because Pluto rules the eighth house. This is a very eighth house relationship that we're talking about. Our passion is found there. Our crisis is found there. Our sexuality is found there. Things that we bury are found there. Difficult things are found there. Our daily difficulties are in this house. So Pluto really represents a relationship that has a lot of those themes surrounding it. So when we find ourselves in one of these types of relationships, you have to ask yourself, yes, there's passion. Yes, there is a need to be with each other. Is this how you want to spend your time, though? We only have so much time on this planet to go after what we are really after. How much time do you want to spend in a platonic relationship or in a difficult relationship?
It is difficult.
Because typically we have the chance to stay in these types of relationships forever. Platonic relationships are very, very difficult to break once we get involved in them. It is very much...
That sounds familiar.
Much like a moth to the flame. It is so hard to resist the pull of the energies when we have this going on. It's very much like a black hole that we just cannot resist. Once we are in it, it is a very different story. It is something that we have often a need, a desire to get out of, to be free of, because it becomes very constrictive, very demanding, and we can find that it really saps our energies. So, becoming strong in oneself for what I term the Persephone person. So if you haven't seen my previous videos on platonic relationships, you need to go back and watch those. You're not really going to understand what I'm talking about. There's a lot more information in those. What I term the Persephone person is the person that's playing the victim role. And the Pluto person is the one that's playing the role of the controller or the benefactor. So the Persephone person really needs to take control of her own life because she's really giving that up, giving up control, giving up responsibility to the Pluto person. And the Pluto person is then using that to their advantage. So there is a guilt, an anger at oneself in the Persephone person because of their lack of taking responsibility for their own life. They are giving up a great deal of power to the Pluto person, sometimes all their power. And in that, there is a self-hatred that comes with that, a self-contempt, because they are being weak.
So why do I keep being attracted to Pluto people? I don't know what my problem is. Maybe that's my problem. I got a problem. I'm attracted to Pluto people.
They are standing in their own way of happiness out of the guise of having safety, when really this is not a safe relationship. So becoming strong in themselves is really important, and it's really important to understand the Pluto person, for all their threatening and all their words and all their fist shaking, they are very attached to the Persephone person. They are not going anywhere. There is not much that you can do to get the Pluto person to leave. but they will use that, the threat of abandonment, in order to, you know, hang on to the Persephone person. So when the Persephone person realizes that they can make it on their own, the Pluto person isn't going to make good on their threat, and that their own sense of responsibility has been lacking, when they can put those pieces together, they can really get on top of this kind of relationship. It can really go from something that is a thick relating to something that can become healthy. Now, you have to have both people working on their own ends of things, because you cannot fix a composite chart. A composite chart is what it is. You can't send a composite chart to therapy. So you can send the two individuals. So if the two individuals in a Plutonic relationship are willing to do their work, and typically the Pluto person is not going to be willing to see their part of things, that is not always the case. Sometimes we can have like a significant Pluto transit. It can really open their eyes, and we can see lasting karmic change within them. But most of the time, the Pluto person is always going to blame the Persephone person and is going to insist that they did what they did because they loved them so much. So it's important that if this is going to become a healthy relationship, both partners need to do their separate work. They really need to work on their own issues separately. So this is also a big question I've been receiving, is can't you stay in a Plutonic relationship and fix it? Well, typically no, because it is a very addictive relationship. Pluto, you know, the eighth house, Scorpio, this is where we find our addictions, the 12th house as well, but we're talking about Pluto right now, not Neptune.
Okay, she said the 12th house. Now that might be it also, because, see, I got a lot of stuff in my 12th house. Let's see if I can go to my chart. I have my Sun, I have my Mercury, and my Mars in the 12th house. Now, she, our composite chart, we have our Jupiter and our Black Lilith in the 12th house. I'm not sure what the Black Lilith is all about, really, but Jupiter is your business sign. Let's see here. Going to, she puts her Mercury in my 11th. Did she say 11th house or 12th house? Hang on, let's go back. 1306.
It is in that these both these people are in. This is one of the reasons why it's so difficult to leave relationship. Pluto, you know, the eighth house, Scorpio, this is where we find our addictions, the 12th house as well, but
okay, I'm sorry, 12th house. Going back, 12th house. That's the house of Pisces. Okay, so I have my Pluto in the 12th house. And my Libra in the 12th house. I mean, my Libra, my Moon. I have my Libras, two of my Libras in the 12th house, my Pluto and my Moon. She has her, oh no, wait, in our composite chart, we both have our Sun and Ascendant in the 12th house. In the 8th house, we only have our Rahu, which I don't know what that means, but it's the south node of the moon, so I don't know that that's a major thing or not. And so basically, she puts her Saturn in my 12th house, and I put my ascendant and Chiron in her 12th house. 8th house, so it might be a 12th house thing, because it seems like we have a lot more 12th house stuff going on than 8th house. We don't really have any 8th house stuff going on. Although she does put her Chiron in my 8th house, and then her Chiron is in her 12th house, but she puts her Chiron in my 8th house. I don't know what that means. Then she has, she has, her Chiron and her Ascendant in the 12th house, and nothing serious in her 8th house, and I don't think I have anything in my, I just have my, my K2 in my 8th house, which, like I said, I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means! So, it could be some 12th house issues that we're dealing with. So I'll have to look at that next. If nobody calls in next week, then I'll talk about that maybe.
We're talking about Pluto right now, not Neptune.
Neptune.
So,
I was reading and listening to some audios on Neptune stuff also. So, yeah.
It is an addictive relationship that these both these people are in. This is one of the reasons why it's so difficult to leave. So, it's imperative that they detox from each other on their own, and that they do their work on their own, because if they are remaining in the relationship and attempting to fix it while they are still relating in this plutonic way, it's very much like being an alcoholic and trying to quit drinking while you're drinking. How are you going to do that? We still have the same problems, the same dynamic. You have to cut the dynamic, work on your own issues, and then you have that chance to come back together in a more healthy way. Now, there's, you know, any style of thing, of ways that people can go about, you know, healing or staying together or trying to stay together, but typically this is the way that I see it actually working, and it's rare when it does, because really these relationships are not meant to be the one relationship that we have forever and ever, and it is, you know, something that we want to keep going. The nature of plutonic relationships is that they are upsetting, is that they bring out issues that we don't want to deal with. So typically we don't want to keep, at least the person who's playing the victim role doesn't want to keep this relationship going forever and ever. So it is about passion, yes, but it is about misplaced passion, plutonic relationships. It is about selfish passion. Love is a selfless thing. Love is not about taking from the other. It is about giving. In plutonic relationships, we're very concerned with our end, with what we get, with what we're being served. When really, love is about giving without expectation of receiving. So, there's a lot of room in plutonic relationships for resentment to bleed in. And they can become very, very poisoned by resentment, anger, sadness, expectation over time. So they are binding. They are attractive relationships. They are deep, and they are unforgettable. But they are dangerous. They can be damaging, And it is very much like playing with fire when we get involved in these relationships. So I hope this gave a little bit more clarity, a little bit of a clue about what it is I'm talking about. You can find me on the internet at truthinaspectastrology.com and on Facebook at Truth in Aspect Astrology. I do lots of writing over on Facebook and articles and all kinds of super cool stuff, so check me out over there. I do do private consultations all the time, email for appointment. And if you haven't subscribed to my channel, please do so, and I'll be back super soon with another super cool video. Bye-bye.
I'm attracted to Pluto women, Plutonians. I just went back and looked at my ex before my last ex. She had Pluto at 11 degrees. I have Pluto at 5 degrees. She doesn't have anything within 5 degrees of my Pluto, except her own Pluto is within 6 degrees of my Pluto. But then I have my moon, which is one of the ones they were talking about, within 3 degrees, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 4 degrees, within 4 degrees of her Pluto, and then I have my Mars within 3 degrees of her Pluto. So here I am again in one of those Plutonian relationships where I'm the whatchamacallit, and the woman is the Plutonian. So, go figure. I guess I'm attracted to Pluto women. Plutonians. Great. So I am crazy. There's my problem. I gotta stay away from Plutonians. Last but not least.
Hey friends, Jewel back with more super cool astrology videos. And I thought we would contribute a little bit more to my Plutonic relationship series today and talk about how to end or move on from a Plutonic relationship or obsession, since they are very much linked. So Pluto is that energy that is what we choose to bury, what we choose to not acknowledge. What fuels our passions, because it is what we deeply want and deeply crave, but aren't so aware of it, because these are very hidden parts of ourselves. So it's very much known as the battery pack or the power pack in our chart, because it's kind of that, the energy that sits in the background and controls everything in the foreground. But we're under the impression that we're controlling everything, when it's really the hidden, unacknowledged parts of us that are really working harder to spur us to make certain choices or take certain actions. So human beings, you know, we're very much oriented to think that we are, you know, conscious, rational people. Really, that's not the case. We are very much motivated by our unconscious desires. And we are inherently irrational, because we base most of our opinions, choices, decisions, beliefs on feelings, and very little on actual facts or rational thinking. So we are a real interesting lot of people. So obsessions cause an imbalance that needs to be seen and acknowledged, because a lot of times when we are in the throes of a Plutonic obsession, we are convinced that it is true love and that it is something that we need to pursue, because if we don't, we will never be happy again, or we will never achieve the quality of happiness that this other person represents to us. So we neglect other parts of our life in lieu of dedicating energy to our obsession. when we are involved in these types of relationships. And Pluto has this very consuming quality. When we become obsessed, we actually are heavily addicted to this relationship or this other person or the possibilities that this other person presents to us. That's a big one, the possibilities with Pluto. And we are very much, we almost like abduct our own minds when we fall into a Plutonic obsession. You know, we become the own Pluto to our Persephone when we do this, because we put ourselves in this position where we are very much trapped in our feelings, or very much trapped in our desires. So when those are not returned, this is extremely painful. And the thing is we have to pull back and take back conscious control when we are in the midst of this. Conscious control of our own desires and not pin those desires on another. So it's very devastating when we find ourselves not having the object of our obsession return our feelings, because we have so heavily invested in them needing to make us happy or needing to acknowledge our love or love us back. Then we can be happy. So, we have to move on when one of these relationships ends, when it becomes clear that we are the only one obsessed, or, you know, maybe we're both obsessed, but we can't be together. Whatever the case, you have to eventually move on. And how do we do that? This is a real hot topic. Among, you know, scorpionic people, plutonic people, people that have a lot of eighth house, because they are more prone to these types of relationships. So, moving on involves several things. It's very important to recognize that the other person is not the source of your happiness. You have to take back control of your own future, because we very much give that away when we are in one of these heavily passionate and plutonic relationships. We can find that, you know, the future that we had previously imagined for ourselves, we give that over completely to this new obsession and really forget about our previous plans. So you have to remember and acknowledge that it is not coming from them. Your happiness is not stemming from this person. It never was, because we get very much convinced that we'll never be happy unless this person will love us back or love us the way that we want them to love us. So another one is that we have to accept the feelings, the intense feelings that we feel in these relationships, and the longing that we have for the other person. They may always be there. There is always going to be a memory of a great passion when we have had a lot of Pluto between us, or when we are heavily plutonic ourselves. It's not ever going to get to the point that you can just forget about it, because of the way, the nature of Pluto, what it represents. It is our deepest desires. So it's pretty rare to be able to just completely cut that off and have no memories of that going into the future. And that's a lot of the fear associated with moving on with people, is they are really afraid that they will be wasting their time trying to move on, because they already have sensed that they are always going to be subject to these feelings of passion, and that's just part of it. It's just part of it. It's always going to be there. It will lessen, but the memory of a great passion is something that we have to be willing to live with. Recognizing the parts of the obsession that you loved or that were so attractive, this is another thing that we need to do to move on. We need to really recognize what it is about that person that had us so hooked, because those are the parts of us that we need to be investing in. Those are the parts of us that we need to be developing. Those are the parts of us that we need to be loving instead of seeing that in another and deciding to love it through them. Because we see very much our potentials reflected in another when we have a lot of Pluto going on. And so bringing that love that we had pinned on the other, specifically to those missing or undeveloped parts or places within ourselves, really provides a balm that is very effective when we are trying to leave one of these obsessional relationships. Focusing on yourself is a huge one with this, because when we become addicted or obsessed with somebody else, we abandon ourselves and we focus on them, and we very much forget about our own needs, and we start a lot of times developing the characteristics or the qualities or the lives that we think the other one is going to want to see in us. So bringing the energy that you have been putting out there onto them back to you is huge. Another one is that this addiction will need to be replaced with something new. There will be a lot of extra time in your life when you start to try to walk away from one of these obsessional relationships, and that time is going to have to be filled with something healthy. So,
like chocolate.
I tell people to develop grounding habits to fill in the gaps and the time that you will now have on your hands that is now your time. And it will be a lot of time. You will be surprised at how much you spend cyber-stalking, thinking, fantasizing, mooning around, investigating. All of that takes time. And so you will need to develop grounding habits such as gardening, meditation, healthy visualization, not about the obsession. We must reawaken the rest of the brain when we are coming out of one of these relationships, because our focus, it's like we shut down so much of the other parts of our life. We shut down so much of the other parts of our brain that we are flexing our Pluto muscle, but our other muscles are becoming atrophying. They are getting jelly, and we need to focus back on the larger scope of our life and of our thinking, and widen our view, screw on a wide lens onto our perceptual camera, where previously we had something that was very limited in scope. So it's very important to find something that works for you to fill in that time, and it needs to be something that is going to be grounding, because Pluto is not. Pluto is a very existential force, And we need to be doing Venus types of things. Things that are very much about the senses and bringing us back into our bodies. Because it's almost like we dissipate into this plutonic realm that we get used to living in, and we need to reorient ourselves to come back into our bodies and to experience the sensual things of our own nature. So another one is that healing may require moving or changing your routine or your persona, your looks. Something has to change in order for us to get to a point of moving on. Very, very important for people to get a change of scenery, go on a vacation, maybe move to a different town, change your appearance. This infuses us with a new passion for our own life and really reawakens us to the new possibilities where we have to make that leap from the old to the new. And a lot of times, change is the way to do that. Pluto doesn't like change. Pluto is that energy that is happy with the way things are, but the thing is the nature of Pluto is that he's about change. So we have two of the same things going on. It's that entrenched part of us, but it's also that part of us that has to be forced or propelled to die off so something new can take its place, something more appropriate, something more real. So distracting ourselves is another one that really goes a long way towards providing a buffer between us and these plutonic feelings. Distracting ourselves for longer and longer periods. That means taking your mind off of the obsession and putting it on to something else. Because we have to very much retrain our feelings and retrain our brains to start receiving pleasure from more appropriate sources. And when we distract ourselves with something that is distracting, something that is encompassing, something that is interesting, something that requires our attention or our focus. Humans are very much like horses. I have horses, so I use a lot of horse psychology with my children. We can really only focus totally on one thing at a time. And so when we can bring our focus, our attention from the relationship, the obsession, we are developing our strength in another area. So we are taking that attention and putting it somewhere that is going to provide more interest than the plutonic obsession. So when we distract ourselves for longer and longer periods of time, we can kind of build that interest muscle. We can build the excitement that we put into other endeavors because we have to break that focus. And the number one thing that I recommend for people who are trying to move on from this kind of obsessional time is that having a cord-cutting ceremony or strong visualization is really important. And that is when we visualize or imagine that tie or that cord that's keeping us to them. We imagine that being severed. We bring the hammer down on it. We take a big pair of gardening shears and cut that off. However you want to do it. Some people cauterize it. Whatever works for you, that will be your mode of the cord cutting. So go into it open to what device or what mode or what way you're you're going to cut the cord, because your higher self will very much direct you to what the proper detail is. And you need to imagine this in detail. Whatever device it is you're using, some people take that cord and they just stretch it till it snaps. So, you know, however you do it is right for you. And you may have to do it several times, especially when the feelings of need or the feelings of desire or the feelings of I got to pick up the phone, I got to reconnect, I got to call him, cut that cord. That will break that energetic tie. So it's very important also to remain open to suggestions from others, because other people are going to see you as obsessed. You are not going to acknowledge it or want to hear that or believe it until a certain amount of time has gone by and you're fed up or you're willing to change or you've been hurt enough or dragged through the mud enough or drug yourself through the mud enough because the other person has nothing to do with this obsession. Obsessions can take slightly different forms. So remaining open to hearing what other people are saying about what they're seeing is so important, because that will give you the clues that you need to kind of let you know where you're at in this obsession or in the stages of it. You know, when we're really in it, then people are like shaking us, like, he doesn't want anything to do with you, wake up, or he's an idiot, or he's a jerk. And we just don't hear it, don't want to, no, that was just today, or you should see him on a good day, or, you know, we have to hear and be willing to listen to what other people are saying, because, you know, when we're getting towards the end of this, we'll start hearing things like, you know, I've noticed you've been around a lot more, or that, you know, you've been more expressive, or, you know, you don't have that blank stare in your eye anymore. You're always dreaming about this other person. These are really good clues to tell us how we're doing, give us a sense of where we are on that road to recovery. So I hope that this was helpful to you. This is a very painful subject and very complex, and can really take some bravery and some gumption to move on from. And if you have been in one of these types of obsessional relationships and have been able to leave it, I would love to hear your suggestions and your stories about what went on there. And it's such a fascinating topic that has such, I want to say, such a pervasive hold on so many people that it's one that sharing our experiences and our tips having to do with this is really important, because this is something, these platonic obsessions can leave people feeling very isolated and feeling very much like they don't know where to turn, or they don't know what to do, because there is such an irrational facet to this type of thing. So please subscribe to my channel if you have not done so. You can find the link right down below. You can find me on Facebook at Truth in Aspect Astrology, where you should be following me, because I do birthday descriptions, the astral weather forecast. I also specialize in planetoids and asteroids, so you can find my writings over there on those. My new website is coming up super soon. You can pre-order my book at Astrology Wizards on Facebook. That is the group page that I run with my two professional astrologer colleagues. And I will be back super, super soon with more amazing videos. Bye-bye.
Yeah, she almost sounds like a man-hater, because when she's talking about this Plutonian situation, she makes it sound like all men, or not all men maybe, but a lot of guys are the Plutonians and the women are the victims. And I can see that being the case a lot, but I can't see that being the norm, you know, or the majority, because it appears like I'm attracted to Plutonian women. because I just went back and looked at the last three relationships that I was in, and all of them were Pluto women, you know, according to this audio, these audios we just listened to. And so then I basically have been putting myself into the victim position. So I have to watch out for putting myself into that position now with Pluto women, you know, I guess, whatever. But so yeah, I don't know. I like her message, but I have an uneasy feeling about her because it sounds like she's attacking men with the subject. But, you know, maybe she just, like I said, she's been hurt and she has a personal whatever the terminology is. This subject is personal to her. And yeah, I have to look at my brother's relationships because, you know, the way she describes this Plutonian relationship, my brother tends to be the Pluto person. So it's like, it goes back to one of the subjects we had a couple weeks ago on our podcast about codependency. And, you know, where I tend to be the codependent. And my brother tends to be the other person, and the women that he gets in a relationship with tend to be the codependents. So that might be one of the astrological indicators for codependent relationships. I still keep forgetting that other planetary person's name, but the one who becomes, you know, the servant, if you will, the codependent to the Pluto person. And, so yeah, I guess that gives me another tool for my psychology belt. People who tend to get into Pluto relationships with Pluto people, or Plutonian relationships with Pluto people, you know, tend to be the codependents. And so that's one way to have a codependent. Watch out for those types of relationships. If they see that this person has a Pluto conjunct with certain planets, then they need to not get involved ahead of time before they get too addicted and too attached and where they can't get loose, they can't get free. So, been there, done that, and I'm embarking on that situation again. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't see this girl as being volatile like the last one. Oh, my God, the last one was horrible. But the one before that, you know, I don't know. I loved all of my exes, from, you know, pretty much. I mean, I can't think of any that I didn't love at the time. Most of them I still have love for, still love. I still have loving feelings towards them. There's only a few that have destroyed that love that I had for them. But I'm willing to bet if I go back and look at all of the relationships I've ever had, if I can get all of their birthdays, I'm willing to bet most every single one of them, their Pluto was conjunct with different signs of my astrology. So, or maybe even something else that's just as severe. A lot of my relationships were pretty intense, but yeah. I'm getting tired and we're already at 2 hours. Oh, and I still gotta do Ron Paul. Ron Paul Revolution! David never called in, nor did anybody else.
Update for Monday, March 14th. During her appearance before the Senate Judiciary Committee last week, Attorney General Loretta Lynch admitted that she asked the FBI to examine whether the federal government should take legal action against so-called climate change deniers. Attorney General Lynch is not responding to any criminal acts committed by climate change skeptics. Instead, she is responding to requests from those frustrated that dissenters from the alleged climate change consensuses have successfully blocked attempts to create new government programs to fight climate change. These climate change censors claim that the argument over the climate change is settled and denier success is blocking congressional action is harming the public. Therefore, the government must disregard the First Amendment and silence anyone who dares question the reigning climate change dogma. This argument ignores the many reputable scientists who have questioned the magnitude, effects, and role of human action in causing climate change. If successful, the climate change censor could get a precedent that could silence numerous other views. For example, many people believe the argument over whether or not we should audit and then end the Fed is settled. Therefore, the deniers of Austrian economics are harming the public by making it more difficult for Congress to restore a free market monetary policy. So why shouldn't the government silence Paul Krugman? The climate change censorship movement is part of a larger effort to silence political speech. Other recent examples include the IRS's harassment of Tea Party groups, as well as that agency's, fortunately thwarted, attempt to impose new rules on advocacy organizations that would have limited their ability to criticize a politician's record in the months before an election. The IRS and many state legislators and officials are also trying to force public policy groups to hand over the names of their donors. This type of disclosure can make individuals fearful that if they support a pro-liberty group, they will face retaliation from the government. Efforts to silence government critics may have increased in recent years. However, the sad fact is the U.S. government has a long and shameful history of censoring speech. It is not surprising that war and national security have served as a convenient excuse to limit political speech. So-called liberal presidents Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Roosevelt both supported wartime crackdown on free speech. Today, many neoconservatives are using the war on terror to justify crackdowns on free speech, increased surveillance of unpopular religious groups like Muslims, and increased government control of social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter. Some critics of U.S. foreign policy have even been forbidden to enter the country. Many opponents of government restrictions on the First Amendment and other rights of Muslims support government actions targeted so-called right-wing extremists. These fair-weather civil liberty defenders are the mere image of conservatives who support restricting the free speech rights of Muslims in the name of national security, yet claim to oppose authoritarian government. Defending speech we do not agree with is necessary to effectively protect the speech we support. A government that believes it can run our lives, run the economy, and run the world will inevitably come to believe it can and should have the power to silence its critics. Eliminating the welfare warfare state is the key to protecting our free speech and other liberties from an authoritarian government. Thanks for calling this update. A new update is placed on this number, 888-322-1414 every Sunday. The written text can be found on my Ron Paul Institute website at
To repeat the announcement, press 1.
All right, well, that concludes our podcast for today. So you can find more of our podcasts at DementedDungeonsAndDragons.com, where we talk about pretty much everything but Dungeons & Dragons. All right, party on.
Thank you. Stop using me.